Jaspreet Boparai and Don Nicholson with Greenwashed on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
You're back with RCR Greenwashed with Jaspreet and Don. And a headline in the blogosphere last week caught my eye, and it was written by a left-wing, well-known left-winger, Chris Trotter, and it was on Friday the 14th of June, and it said, "The illusion of power, how local government bureaucrats overawe democratically elected councillors." And I thought, gee, there's something to see in here. So I read it through and I thought, man, this guy's obviously had a late life crisis going on, because he was so left wing. I couldn't believe it was the same man writing this stuff. But it's symptomatic of what is going on around this country, in my opinion, with local government, where management capture is rife and the councillors are made almost mute in the whole local government machinery. So with that in mind, and watching what's been going on in Environment Southland, Jaspreet, in my province's council recently, I thought, who better to have on to explain this than an old colleague of mine, Doug Fraser. Now, Doug and I we go back a long, long time, and we got a lot of points on the board, you'd say, because when we were in Federated Farmers, we probably set the tone for the National Federation's policies for many years, and in fact, perhaps even still today. Itemised rate demands was one thing that we actually did get through in Invercargill and our area to begin with, and then nationally. And of course, ever since then, councils have done anything but try to be visible and have itemised rate demands, because it's very convenient to sort of bury stuff, as they're prone to do. And itemizing, great idea, just hard to keep it going. So Doug's had a long career as a farmer. He's got a degree in science, Bachelor of Science. He's also Institute of Directors Chartered Fellow. There's a name for that.
Yeah. Right.
Yep. And been chairman of many companies in the South. So a long history in Southland, very parochial Southlander. Welcome to RCR Greenwash, Doug. You're certainly never, ever taking your foot off the throat of local government here, and yet they still get away with behaviour that I don't think is becoming of an organisation that is supposedly built on professionalism. It does appear, as the headline from Chris Trotter said, that management capture is overawing the democratically elected councillors. And Environment Southland this year, there was a 23% rate increase mooted. And now they've that was bad enough, and was still bad, of course. Local authorities have been expanding their remit by a factor of three times CPI for the last 25 years. So the machinery never stops, but there's something not right with Environment Southland. They're talking about their rate increases are going to be 12%, maybe 13%, but I smell a rat, and I think you do too. How have they done that, Doug? 23% to 12. How does that work?
Well, it appears, Don, that they've there's been 330 submissions went into the LTP, so there was a bit of pressure on around affordability, particularly in the farming sector, in the sheep farming sector. And so they buttoned back, and essentially, rather than reduce the size of their business, which would have been the right thing to do, given they increased the size of their business 3 years ago at the behest of the Labor government, we've got a national government now, led government now, that are asking that we wind this sort of stuff back, and they've failed to do so. They have pulled the rate back a little bit to 12.5%, or around about 12.5%. But if you add in the things that they've, the piggy banks, I suppose, you have that they've dug into, you know, rate reserves, surpluses that have been built up over time, is another 4% there, you know, failing to account for depreciation on some of the issues. So these are the sort of things they've done to try and sanitise the situation rather than address the core issues.
And to add confusion to all of this, they started the process of going through this long-term plan by saying we're going to have a simplified rating system. Now, everyone would say, well, heck, about time. How fantastic is that? You know, no splits of local land value and capital value. It was just going to be all capital value, but it was going to be so clean, Doug. They basically didn't understand that where the benefit sits doesn't work unless you apply differentials. Can you explain how that should have applied and why they've taken... Why do you think they've taken no notice of that argument?
Well, they have backed off a little bit and gone through what they've called a transitional process, and really we'll have to keep the pressure on next year to ensure that they actually go through a special consultative process to review the whole issue again. Because what they did was they changed the rating system as part of the LTPC, and of course that has confused people, I have to say. So essentially they want to go to a one-pot system that put biosecurity, land sustainability, general rates, an infrastructure rate, which is based to pay for the capital investment they're going to have in beating climate change, Don. So they've done all those sort of things and put it into a capital value, so that essentially what the management wanted was a one-pot system in the end, where there'd be no open transparency on where the money was coming from and how it was being spent.
Oh, that's really good, isn't it? Open transparency on where it's coming from and how it's spent. You really love that sort of government and governance, don't you? Yeah, fantastic. We're not clearly going to name councillors or anything like that on the show, but there's a clear lack of governance skills. There has to be around these entities, not just in Southland. And that headline from Chris Trotter does say it all to me. Management capture is rife in local government, let alone central government ministries, to be honest. And the elected people are really, just figureheads to be used, actually, the way I read it. There doesn't appear to be anyone with a strength of character to hold back the tide of this largesse of management. And when I look at, I think you and I are now old enough. By the way, listeners, Doug's older than me, but remember when the old catchment board... Yeah, you never know it. Catchment board existed in the South, and there was a staffing regime. Gosh, probably 20 or 30 people ran the show. We're heading to 200, and yep. Most of them have come on board this century. 200, and I would say, and I'm really going to stick it up them right here, the environment is not better off by much for the amount of spending that is filtered through Environment Southland. The environment is not better off. The environment for the wages that are taken out of Environment Southland is. So I'm very concerned that they've lost their way. They're now wanting to even hide further from what they actually do with their monies and corrupt the process. Now, Doug, there's a lot of history in here. We haven't got really time to get to the nub of it, but... You know, we had a flood in Southland in 84. It hit Invercargill badly. There was some floodplains purchased by the councils. And since then, we've had river liaison committee meetings, committees, and they've actually had their reserves. Their balance sheet has been bolstered over time by that lease funding, I gather. And now, as you talked about a moment or two ago, it looks like their piggy bank has been raided. What's fair about that? Where is that money going? Why is it not being just used for those catchments that it should be applied to?
Yeah, well, there was always the agreement that the catchment surpluses would be spent in the catchments where they were generated. But, of course, these lease land reserves, surpluses that are now being generated from the land that was bought by the catchment groups, is being siphoned off at the rate of 450k a year for the next 10 years to pay for the infrastructure spend or the service cost of the infrastructure spend from the shovel-ready product. So, you know, we've got the Stead Street pumps, we've got, protection of flood banks on urban areas, and that's going to continue over the next 3 or 4 years as well. And that cost will be having to be met primarily by the rural sector, because the rural sector makes up about 47% of the capital value in the province. So they're going to pick up the tab for that. But the 450,000, that should have been kept within the catchment, and it's being siphoned off to meet those costs.
Now, if you're irrelevant, the press release that came out from ES said that they have halved their rate rises of 23% to 12.5%. But as a layperson, if you're going to slash rates, for me, it should be commensurate with a similar slash in your spending or in your infrastructure. Something should be reduced. Some amount of work should be reduced, but that's not really happening. They have raided the surpluses here that were available for a particular purpose. So for me, what this means is maybe this year there's a decrease in your rates. And I see people around, and I even found this press release very misleading, because you are saying they're reducing rates. They're not reducing rates. They're keeping them pretty much the same and getting them out of another pot of gold that should have been kept for another purpose.
Yeah, they're in the hands are caught in the cookie jar at the moment. And essentially they haven't addressed the issue of reducing the size of their business.
Of reducing the spending
there's no evidence of that.
Well, I think their total spending is heading to 55 million, and it used to be 17 million not many years ago. So certainly any other business would actually cut its cloth to suit the environment it's in, which is, in terms of farming, you've got a hard year or a tough year, you just have to rein everything in. And if it means dismissing a staff member or going without some sort of addition to your property, you do it. This outfit doesn't appear to understand that. It's even worse when you've got the repairs or the new pumps that are required to set out to drain effectively the area around the Invercargill Airport. Yeah, we can't change where the airport is now. Perhaps a dumb place where they put it in initially, but it's there. And I remember when those pumps were budgeted first, their replacement was about $700,000 to $1 million.
That was
and
the
I gather that's head. Blown out.
Yeah. And that's blown out to nine. Yeah.
Wow. From 700,000 to 9 million.
Yep.
And that's
what that $450,000 plus some rating money is going to be spent on to service that cost.
Wow. So, and it's not finished yet, but we've got fish-friendly pumps, so that's vital.
Let's hold on a moment. What are fish-friendly pumps here for our listeners' benefit? Is that what's causing an additional $8 million of cost? What are fish-friendly pumps?
Well, I don't know that it can be directly put to those pumps, but the pump, apparently the fish can go through the pumps without being exterminated. So,
Well, and when we're talking of some very rare fish here, because obviously there are people paying through their nose to save these fish, there has to be some cost-benefit analysis here.
Well, apparently there hasn't been, but I certainly haven't seen any, Jasprit.
Wow.
And going back to Doug mentioned climate change, of course, Jasprit and I have spent weeks interviewing people from the Kapiti Coast on the show, months. We've interviewed lots of people, and using the RCP 8.5 concept that the IPCC says is implausible, yet I'll guarantee Environment Southland and its advisors is still using RCP 8.5. Totally implausible scenario. So we're actually trying to future-proof ourselves beyond.
But an impossible future, yeah.
Well, an implausible, atmospheric rivers and everything, Jasprit, you never know. So it's so frustrating, Doug. You've given a long, long time to this. I've watched you. I don't know how you do it, because I used to sort of side with you and sit with you sometimes. And you know that you have what might be assumed a little win, but it's only for a 12-month period, and they come back for what you've supposedly won and double it the next year. I mean, it's just never ending. What is the nub of the problem? Because, I call it way back in the late last century, I raised the ire of the Invercargill City fathers and councillors, staffers and councillors at the time. I called them the perpetrators of legalised theft. And I look at what you have just gone through down here, and I've not been, apart from chairing the groundswell meeting out west and south, and where it was clear the message was this is unacceptable, I think what I'm hearing now, I could say that the governance and management of Environment Southland are the perpetrators of legalised fraud. Is that fair? I mean, I don't want to put you on the spot, actually, but I'm saying that it just seems outrageous that this would carry on. And you keep putting up fact-based analysis for them, and they constantly try to ignore, push you away. How much more of it can we take? Because, you know, the industry down here, the farming industry, which is under attack here, bigger than any other industry, you can't get blood out of a stone.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, I must have a sad life now, but I've actually watched it on all the deliberations he has had on their LTP. You know, there was 330 submissions, and there was a constant message there about affordability and sustainability long term. And it was interesting to watch the process. The councillors just seemed to avoid addressing the big issues, avoid talking about the equity and how rates should be divided equitably amongst the community. There seemed to be a concerted effort from senior management to talk about dollars, and it ended up that the councillors were going down a whole lot of rabbit holes rather than address the major issues, you know, were about the size of the business, you know, how long, you know, what the future was, what their main aims were, and how it would be funded equitably amongst the community. And at the moment, it's falling disproportionately back on the rural sector, and it's quite frankly unsustainable.
Well, and you know, I just go back to my point earlier. 30 or plus years in existence, this council, maybe 35. Initially, I thought they're doing a good job. There's river management to undertake. There's water quality sampling to undertake. There's stuff that you know, common sense would tell you that, you know, it's good to do. But $55 million spending potentially ahead per year, I'll just reiterate, I cannot see the value proposition from Environment Southland at all, and haven't seen it for years, to be honest. They are way outside their remit. What minister is going to have the courage to say this can't carry on anywhere in the country?
Not sustainable. And it probably, I pointed out in my submission to them about, I did a little case study on my dairy farm for the last 24 years between 1999 and 2023. And the rates had gone up a total of 250% or 10.4% per annum. And it was interesting to break it down even further. The general rate had gone up 370%, well, 15% per annum, and biosecurity, very similar. Land sustainability gone up 2,533% or 105% per annum for 24 years. And yet their core business had only gone up 56%. I say only in inverted commas, 56% in those 24 years or 2.3% per annum. So they've lost their way. They've gone away from their core business to manage the rivers. And you know, what's in land sustainability is all the planners and all the things that are actually stopping people being efficient in this province and making changes that are required to meet the commercial realities of life. So,
yeah there's certainly a plethora, if that's the right word, of unreality in Environment Southland, and I would suggest most other environment councils around New Zealand, let alone the territorial authorities. The Power of General Competence came into being in 2002, and I know that lifted the sort of ambit of the territorials, but I never expected it to have such an effect, if it has had an effect, on environment councils around New Zealand. But gee, you look at the growth of environmentalism over the last 30 years, the new religion, as it was called by my predecessor at Feds, environmentalism is the new religion. Well, I'm now reading plenty of blog posts about the death of environmentalism. So, but regardless, we've had 20 to 30 years of this extreme pressure to do something, regardless of the facts, by the Green lobby.
And central government asked asked Environment South in 3 years ago to increase their budget, increase their capability, and indeed put 30% increase of general rate on the community. Now this new government, new coalition government, is asking that to be reversed, and they haven't reacted to do that. That is the problem. That's the underlying problem.
Now, we began this one, Doug, by saying talking about the fact how local government bureaucrats, as this Chris Trotter's article is, overawed democratically elected councillors. I believe the tone is set from the top. What's happening at local government is happening at centre government. We've had James Shaw leave, and I've spoken about this in the past, the climate change portfolio being taken over by Minister Simon Watts. The private secretary has remained the same. The bureaucrats are not moving. In Wellington, they are still the same, and it's only the ministers that keep changing. So there is no doubt to me, in my head at least, why this is happening, because you've got the same people who set the agenda for the previous government still sitting pretty there in their seats without a problem. Oh yeah, I mean, we have media talking about these many bureaucrats have lost their job, or those many have, but most of the key positions, nothing has changed. And I would have thought with the new government, which supposedly has a completely different, you know, outlook, agenda from the last one, the first thing would be to rout people out of these positions. Because I just think if someone, a bureaucrat, has spent 6 years defending a particular position under a previous minister, and the new one is radically opposed to them, they would find it unconscionable to, you know, still be in those seats. But no one seems to think like that. I seem to be an, you know, odd one out here. And the same thing is happening. We've also seen in the last week the news from Wellington City Council, where the chief executive, in the tones of this Chris Trotter article, she has tried to draft a new code of conduct for the elected members, which is going to withhold, which is going to see the management withhold key reports, key you know, data inputs, on the basis of which the councillors are supposed to make the decision. This is complete overtake by management at every level, local government, centre government. And I feel unless some people are moved out of these roles, you have a change. With a change in government, you cannot expect really, you know, massive change in direction.
Yeah. Yeah, well, sorry, I'll just give a bit of penny's worth there. I remember probably 20 years ago, a senior politician addressed the Society of Local Government Managers meeting. You know, so it's they have their society. Can you believe it? The senior managers have a society, a union.
Solgam.
Solgam, it was called.
It is now called Tai Tuara, John.
Yeah, well, I don't. In line with the times. I had to take a deep breath as you said that, Jaspreet. But the answer I got back, I said, go in there and see what we can do, because we've got to tidy local government up. We've got to really put the wood on them and say, we can't do this. Your remit doesn't need to be expanded. The ratepayers of New Zealand just want their core business done well. Don't want all this frivolous stuff around the edges. Don't want you into economic development. Don't want you into all sorts of stuff that effectively private enterprise could do.
Yep.
This gentleman came out of that meeting and he said, Don, they are the most untouchable union he's ever come across. And I think that's where we are today. These people, they know if they get a black mark against them in their own region, they just go somewhere else for the employment. It's a very, very cozy club. And no one talks like this. I know that I'm considered a, you know, I'm bludgeoning them here. They deserve it. They deserve it because they're doing it at great cost to my pocketbook and your pocketbook. And we're sick of it. But the worst thing is they get their sycophants, they get their ratepayers who support them. And we've got them in farming. Oh, we're doing a good job. Oh, we must do this. We must do carbon neutral. We must do managed retreat. We must do. No, we want you to go back and get in your box and leave us alone so that real people can get on doing real stuff. The sad thing is every year, Doug, I notice you doing this. I've witnessed leaders, quite often it's the mayor or chair of these organizations say, but oh, this is the unfunded mandate. We have to do it because it's devolved from central government and it comes without funding. I have never, ever seen anyone in those leadership roles say to the government, we don't want to do it. They've always said, yeah, when government says jump, they jump. high. So we've got big problems, haven't we? And I'm sick of being, as the colloquial term is, rogered annually. And gee, that's close, isn't it? Close to the wind there. But it's what's happening. And why can't 300 or so people's submission is submitted to that ES plan? Why can't the councillors take note to a greater extent? I mean, they think they've done God's work because they've halved on pay on that for the media. They've halved it.
That's misleading.
It's totally misleading.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, if you think of the big picture, Don, you know, I've always said that you must clearly establish a transparent relationship between the delivery of a service, this is talking about local government, and the policy making and funding of that service. And, you know, it's only when you get a clear relationship between those elements will there be rational decision making about the type and quantity of service, and true efficiency in the delivery of these services is established. So, you know, I said that about 30 years ago in one of my earlier submissions to local government. And I don't know that we've made a hell of a lot of progress over the years, Don. But that's the essence of it, because, you know, I watched Environment South and just essentially shifting things around. So there was 50% win and 50% loss out of the new rating system. So they would try and drive through the middle and end up with one big pot, which they could slop around in for the next millennia.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I'll counter that one, Doug, and you're not the only one who has a sad life listening to 330-odd submissions. I go back to Local Government Mag papers way, way back. So this is from an article in the Local Government Mag in December 2016. It was called Snarlers at the Barbecue. And they talk about the fact that rates, what are rates? And the article has this very tone of, if you say that you're in local government as an employee, you know, you are, people start questioning you on our Christmas barbecue, you can't have your piece. So here's some ready-made answers for you. What do you do? And they very helpfully say, a large proportion of the community, in brackets, almost all sincerely believe, sincerely being the keyword, that their rates are a charge for services received, instead of being a tax on the value of the property. This is a very common misunderstanding and is often reinforced in what you get for your rates chart and submissions that you see. I mean, this is local government itself telling people that, who says we owe you any services? Our job is just to charge you a tax. And then they say another question that often follows this one is, why are my rates higher than the rate of inflation? They say, if they go there, just reply saying that the councils don't shop at the supermarkets, which is how the CPI, the Consumer Price Index, is measured. And hopefully this might be useful as an analogy, but if not, this will help you hopefully segue into a much more interesting discussion about the price of bread, sausages, tomato sauce, and craft beer. This is how, I mean, I can't even believe I'm reading this, but this is how, this is a level of derision towards those who pay their wages. They don't even pretend anymore that rates are a value for services rendered. I see Don's face.
Well, you might recall that at that meeting in a Tautau, Jaspreet, I highlighted to a councillor that who had said that ES had to fund services, and I put it to him that actually in their policy, on their revenue and financing policy update and rating review statement of 2024, it said fundamentally rates are a tax and not an exchange of money for a service. What we are required to look at, what all sectors pay, and allocate an appropriate share of costs that recognise all factors we are required to consider under the legislation. Well, they fail that test. Aside from shooting himself in the foot that night, and you know, he took it on the chin, so he was doing his job as best he could on the night. It's all there. Their remit for their job is all there, and yet they won't apply it. They will not apply it. And it's all about bloody politics, isn't it? It's all about politics and safety. The minority in our province is farmers, and we're being screwed because that's just the easiest way to do it. How long can farmers keep doing it? Keep taking.
Well, do we need to be looking at restructuring the way local government's managed? Well, governed. Governed is the right word. Because, you know, it's not looking good at the moment, because it's just not sustainable the way it's going at the moment.
It's never been sustainable, Doug. And getting them back to their core business is fundamental. And you're right, getting governance skills, the right type of governance would make a big difference. So you get rid, is it too much to ask at a regional level to stop having politics being played? Yeah, yeah, politics get played enough at a central government level.
Yeah, well, 10 or 12, 15 years ago, there was talk about local government using the Institute of Directors for training, but that just seemed to be sidelined by some forces, and it never ever happened, Donald. So I'm not sure what happened there.
Yeah,
which is disappointing.
Yeah. Look, listeners, we could go on for hours and hours and hours on this. It exercises the brains of many, or the minds of many people around the country. And it's frustrating that the people that are doing the thinking are ignored, mostly ignored. Small wins, but the next year it's lost again and taken back. So I say to the minister, Simeon Brown, give a clearer message that this is unsustainable. To Prime Minister Luxon, please say this is unsustainable. Seymour, Peters, they all know this is unsustainable. Why can't they have the courage of their convictions to actually direct the traffic here and tell local government to rein itself in, fix the potholes first, before you do anything else? But there just doesn't seem to be a political will to do that, whether it's from the Minister of Local Government or the Ministry for the Environment. There just doesn't appear to be this willingness yet. How can we influence that is the question, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, Doug, I know we're taking half an hour or more out of your day. Jaspreet's probably got lots more questions, but we probably better wrap this up and just thank you very much for all your work that you do on behalf of the community, actually, for the years of work you've done. Never taken a beam, just do it in your own time and give a lot of advice. You've done it willingly. Let's hope we can get some wins to give you the payback, actually, that you so richly deserve. So thanks for coming on RCR Greenwash today, and there'll be an update coming soon, I'm sure.
Well, thanks, Don. Jaspreet, thank you for the work you do for RCR and for the wider community. So, my pleasure.
Thank you, Doug. Bye-bye.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.